This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest is the songwriter that Johnny Cash described as his favorite, Billy Joe Shaver. He's going to sing a couple of his songs for us. Shaver songs have been recorded by Cash, Willie Nelson, Kris Kristofferson, Bob Dylan, and Elvis Presley. Shaver wrote all but one song on Waylon Jennings' 1973 breakthrough album, Honky Tonk Heroes. In the 70s, Shaver songs were an essential part of country music's outlaw movement, which broke out of the slick Nashville style. He's recorded several albums of his own, and for years performed with his son, the guitarist Eddie Shaver. Eddie died of a drug overdose in late 2000. Just about a year earlier, Billy Joe Shaver lost his mother and his wife to cancer. You can hear his heart breaking in some of his recent songs. Billy Joe Shaver reflects on his life and music in a new memoir. Last summer, some of his musician friends got together to perform his songs in a 65th birthday tribute. Now a CD of those performances has been released, called A Tribute to Billy Joe Shaver. It features some of his best-known songs, including Georgia on a Fast Train, Ride Me Down Easy, Bottom Dollar, and Tramp on Your Street. Jimmy Dale Gilmore does a song of yours called Hearts a Bustin'. It's a beautiful song. And before we hear it, I'd like you to tell us the story behind the song. I assume you wrote this for your wife, who died in 1999 of cancer. Was she alive when you wrote it?
You know, that's a real old song.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And the strange thing about it is that I wrote it and I hid it from her because she'd have to be dead, you know. And somehow or another, I knew she was going to die before I did. Or maybe I knew she was going to die and this song would be there. I don't know. But I knew something was going to happen. She was going to die. And I wrote this song about this little lily. I guess it's in the lily family. I don't know much about flowers either. I'm a redneck. And this one, though, it looks like a little, it has the petals coming out and it's a little booger and it's just as white as it can be, white as snow. But on the inside of it is a petal that looks like a heart, but it's broken. It's broken kind of almost half in two. And it just looks like blood red. It just looks like it's bleeding, you know. And I don't know the correct name for that flower, but the hillbillies and stuff around there call it a Hearts a Bustin'. And that's where I got the idea for the song.
I'd like to play the Jimmy Dale Gilmore version of your song, Hearts a Bustin'. And this is on the tribute album, The Tribute to Billy Joe Shaver, which was recorded live last August in Austin. So here's Hearts a Bustin'.
It's so wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Hearts a Bustin' grew down by the river that flows by the old paper mill. In the springtime we stood there together at the top of the old stone fort hill. Many's the time I've been lonesome since you left. I don't know what to do. Like a flower that grows on the hillside, my heart's a bustin' for you. Heart's a bustin' is a beautiful flower. It looks like his heart's burst inside. I miss you so much, your sweet, gentle touch. I'll love you till the day that I die. One day in a year when the time's right, the Indians flow round the bend. I don't know when I'll go, but somehow I know someday I'll be with you again. Hearts a bustin'.
That's Billy Joe Shaver's song, Hearts a Bustin'. a song by Jimmy Dale Gilmore and featured on the new tribute album to Billy Joe Shaver. And Billy Joe Shaver is my guest. Your wife, for whom that song was written, died in 1999. I know you'd separated several times over the years.
Yes.
You were married three times.
Married three times, yeah.
The last time you were married, she had cancer. She had colon cancer. Did you know that this time it was forever, that was, that you'd stay
together?
Yeah,
I knew. I knew I was doing a movie. I was doing The Apostle. I met Robert Duvall, and then about 10 years later, they called up. He didn't call me, but they called me up for a screen test to come down here to Austin. I live in Waco, and come down to Austin, do a little screen test, and see if you got what it takes to do this part. So I did, and it wasn't that hard, and went down to Louisiana, Lafayette, Louisiana. Anyway, I called my wife because he put me in a presidential suite, which actually I asked the bellhop. I said, man, is this the right place? Because I didn't even set my bags down. It was a huge place. It had big old tables and TVs. Oh, well, anyway. I didn't have nobody to share it with, so I called Brenda up. She's living with some convict then. She thought she was in love, I guess. Maybe she was. And I finally convinced her to drive to Lafayette. And she got in her truck and drove. She had one of them little minivans, and she drove all the way. And when she got there, she was like, I'd never seen her before. She was real blowed up, you know, and real tired. She went directly to bed, and Johnny Cash and them came while we were filming and stuff, and she still didn't get out of bed. She just stayed in that bed for 3 days. I couldn't even get her hardly to turn over. She was so exhausted. And I knew something was wrong with her. And when I got done, I just got with her, and I took her right straight to the doctor. He's an old fella here in Nashville. He was older. And some reason or another, he hadn't read the charts. We'd been doing blood tests, but didn't read the charts right or something, and she had advanced rectal cancer. And then we took her over, and she had surgery and all kinds of things, chemo. She went through all that stuff. I stayed with her. It was almost 3.5 years, and I got to do a lot of things for her that she didn't, you know, that she had done for me. We bonded so hard on that last trip there that, I don't know, I just fell back in love with her again. I just never had died, and when she passed, it was terrible. I mean, it wasn't terrible. I was happy for her because she was in such pain, but it wasn't long after that my son passed, but my mother had passed about 3 months before that, and my mother-in-law had passed about 3 months before that. So there was a lot of dying going on, and it comes in threes like that, and I don't know. I was real happy for her in a way, and then Eddie, he never got over it.
Your son?
Yeah, he just never got over it.
Yeah, you've said that your son and your wife were so close in age. She was 17.
Yeah.
When
your
son
turned
was
17.
Born.
She was.
And you said they were more like friends than parents.
They were.
Son.
They were so cool, man. They went everywhere. They just had so much fun. And all his wives were jealous of her, you know, I mean, because they just had so much fun together. They just run, did everything, and he was a great guy, and she was a great girl.
You had performed with your son, Eddie. He was a guitarist, singer, songwriter.
Yes, sir.
And
he was great.
You recently finished up an album that he was working on when he died, and I think he was what, 36 when he died?
He was 38.
38.
I think it was 38. I'm not sure. I don't know.
Well,
I can't remember.
I thought before we talk about your son a little bit that I would play a track from that final album. And this is actually him solo. It's called Necessary Evil. And some of the tracks on here you overdubbed on after your son died.
Yes.
But this one is just a solo Eddie Shaver. Do you want to say anything about this particular
recording?
Yes, I do. Or about what you liked about your son's performing style?
Well, my son had played with Booker T. The first 2 years that Dwight Yoakam went out, he played lead guitar for him. And he played with Dickie Betts. Dickie Betts gave him his 335 that belonged to Duane Allman and a 55 Strat when he was 13 years old. And Dickie had recognized quicker than I did how much talent he had, and he played with me from then on, and he was my lead guitar player, and we just had a three-piece, and we just kicked ass, you know. I mean, he really was great, and he was ready to do an album 2 days later, you know, after he'd passed. And he was a world-class player, and I miss him a lot. It's just so, it's not hard, but it's, you know, I've learned to accept what I can, you know, and go on.
Well, this is Eddie Shaver.
And I called him out in the garage, though, on this one. He was out in the garage playing this song, and it wasn't about 2 weeks before he passed. And I don't know where he come up with it, but I just stuck a little old tape recorder out there, and I had no idea it would come off so clean. But I stuck it out. I said, Eddie, run through that thing again. I just want it down. I want to learn it. And doggone if he didn't just, I mean, he just had him and this old amp. It looked like it wouldn't hardly run, but Eddie tweaked with it, messed with it. I think it had about one or two tubes in it. And he made it run, and then he somehow knocked that thing out just perfect. It's pretty amazing, really.
So this is actually something recorded at home on your tape machine?
Yeah, in the garage.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's now featured on the album Billy Joe Shaver, Billy and the Kid. And here's Billy Joe Shaver's late son, Eddie.
You're a necessary evil. That's what you are to me.
That's Eddie Shaver, the late son of my guest Billy Joe Shaver, from Billy Joe Shaver's album Billy and the Kid. Billy Joe Shaver, how did your son die?
Eddie passed away New Year's Eve 2000, and he died of, they say, a heroin overdose, and I'm not sure. I just don't know. I wasn't there. He got it. Fell in with some bad companions over at a motel there in Waco, and some people he didn't know, and I guess they started early. I thought he was in Austin because we were doing a show that night out at Pootie's, which is out by where Willie Nelson lives, somehow or another he didn't make it. The police come and got me and took me over, and he, I don't know what happened. I really, still to this day, don't know what happened. And I tried to stay in there with him while they were checking to see if he was brain dead. And the police ran me off, and they wouldn't let me back in. Told me they're going to arrest me. Oh, my God. Waco justice, I tell you what.
Your wife died in 1999, and your son at the end of the following year. What was the next year like for you, having lost both of them and your mother as well?
Well, it was very lonesome, but I had my dogs that she left me. She left me two pit bulls, one of them was older, and the one that's with me now, she finally passed away. But if I hadn't had them dogs, I don't know what I'd have done, because they kept me going, because I had to feed them and get up and go. And Willie Nelson, I got to give him credit. He's the one that talked me back out into the world. He said, come on, Billy, he said, you're supposed to play tonight. It's New Year's night. He throwed together a band, because my band just, I don't know if some of them were over there with him or not. I'm not real sure. But they might have been, because they scattered like you couldn't find them, and they left. And so I didn't have a band, but I went on. Willie said, I'll throw something together. And Willie sat up and played all night long, and I'd go up and sing every once in a while. I owe Willie a lot. He's been such a good friend, and he took me down to his house, and we spent the night there and hadn't talked in quite a long time. I've been knowing him since 55, so I've been knowing Willie a long time. And he told me a lot of things because he knew a lot. He's a wise man. And he gave me some money. And you know, it's hard to be in broke when you're in a situation like that. And then he paid for my son's burial. And I didn't have any money at the time. I later got some money from Sony, and I was trying to pay him back, and he wouldn't take it. So I just don't know.
But you say this was New Year's Eve. Was it actually the night that your son died, or a year after that?
Yeah, he died. He died that night, New Year's Eve. He died on New Year's Eve.
And so that night you performed with Willie Nelson. He convinced you to perform.
Yeah, he said, "Get back on the horse." And I'm a cowboy, so I did. And then I just went on and worked from then on. I just kept on doing work, and we had lots and lots of work. So I just kept on working. Kinky Friedman, my friend, Kinky Friedman had a lot to do with it too. He threw together a whirlwind campaign, you know, like not a campaign. He wasn't even in politics then. He just said, "Come on, you got to go to work and quit thinking about this stuff." And I did. And that's about it. I've been working as hard as I can ever since.
You actually had a heart attack on stage in August of 2001. And then you had quadruple bypass. I was thinking about what it must be like to have a heart attack on stage and in front of an audience. How bizarre and kind of creepy. Do you have memories of that?
Well, yeah, it was like an elephant on my chest. But I was at the Green Hall, and you know, I really wanted to die. I don't know. A lot of people say, "Nah, you don't really," but you do. When things like that happen to you. And I was so thankful. I said, "God, thank you so much for letting me die in the oldest honky-tonk in Texas." But I had these doggone nitro because I couldn't hardly sing without it. I'd chunk these nitros, but I'd washed them the night before in my pants, and they were real crumbly, you know. And I would hit them as my, you know, I'd hit them pretty regularly. As a matter of fact, I put in it, stuck the whole bottle, and I was able to sing. I just kept singing, and Jesse Taylor, when he was young, he was in a car accident, and he lost hearing in one of his ears. And it happened to be the ear that was next to me. And I kept telling him, "Just one more." And he thought I meant, you know, I said, "This is the last one." And he thought I meant one more. And he just kept playing. And the audience was so around us, they were just like, it was like hot there because they don't have any air conditioning. Hardwood floors, they just open these flaps, you know, and it's still like it always was. But just kept on playing. And meanwhile, I'm just dying, and I'm taking this nitro. And then afterwards, I had to sign all these things, and I'm still trying to die, you know. I'm wanting to die, actually. Actually, I quit taking the nitro after I got through the singing because I knew I didn't need it then. All I did was sign autographs, and I figured, well, I'll die now. Doggone, I didn't die. I was real upset about that because that was the oldest honky-tonk in Texas, and I thought it would be great to die there. And then the next night I had to go to Pflugerville, of all places. You can't hardly even pronounce it, much less spell it. And at Hanover's, and play there. And I'd got me another motel room. I laid down and still going through this thing, you know. And it'd come in waves then. It kind of gave me a little relief every once in a while. And then I decided, well, I'll go play this, and I'll die here. It's awful to die in Pflugerville, but I will. And the lady that runs my business, T-shirts and stuff, Diane Chain, she came by. She said, "Billy, you're going to the hospital." And I said, "No, I ain't." And she finally talked me into it. And we drove all the way back to Waco, and they took me in there and checked me out. Sure enough, I had 10% blood flow and blowed all my arteries out. They went and put stents in that one so I could get some blood. But I was supposed to go on this tour with Kinky over to Australia. And it was a 3-week tour. And I called him. I said, "Kinky, I had a heart attack. And I got to get this bypass, a 4-way bypass." But while I was in there getting this stents put in my deal, my heart grew another artery. It's called collateral circulation, so I had extra artery, but it was stopped up. But it did grow, and I saw it on DVD. I still got the DVD-ROM just in case somebody calls me out about it. But I told Kinky, I said, I got to have this bypass. I said, heart attack. And he said, hey, people have heart attacks every day. He said, you're going to ruin my career. And I said, what? He said, yeah, you got to go with me. And so he talked me into going to Australia. 3 weeks of teetotal hell. I just wanted to kill him. And finally I got back, and the doctors were mad. Oh, and I got back 2 days before I could even get off jet lag. They had me in there working on me. And an hour and 42 minutes, Chip Oswald cleaned that other one out and did a four-way bypass on me. I got five. I'm running on five, really. So it's wonderful. Heart Hospital, Chip Oswald, was the greatest people in the world.
So you ended up having bypass and...
Yes, I did, after I come back from an Australian trip.
Are you glad that you survived? Sounded like you almost wanted to die.
I did. I kept wanting to die, you know, because... This didn't look like as much for me, but then I realized there's lots and lots of people cared about me. And cared about what I was doing. They started listening to the songs a little more now. You know, death seemed like they bring that around or something. And so late in life for this fame to happen to me, and that's why I wrote that song.
Well, you mentioned your song Fame. You brought your guitar with you, and I'd like to ask you to play that song. Would you tell us when you wrote it and why you wrote it?
I don't know why. It just came to me right before we were to go in and do the overdubs of Eddie's album. And me and him, Billy and the Kid, and Tony Colton wasn't even there, just the engineer and I. And that song just came up in my head. And I just, it wasn't much of a song. It was just a piece of one, but... Actually, it is, I guess, and I just went out there and put it down, just right off the top of my head, and did it.
Is fame something that you'd always wanted?
You know, I'd seen my friends have it and what it did to them. I know that not what it did to them, what it did to the people around them. They never changed. Actually, the people changed. Everybody changed about the way they approached them. You know, they'd get goofy and. Out of the tree and sideways, scared to go up there. Oh, you're a busy man, all that stuff. And you can see that happening. But the performers never change. They stay the same. That's why they're great. And I guess I, in some small way, I touched on that somewhat.
Would you sing Fame for us?
Yes. Fame. You bright elusive thing, somehow you found your way into my life today. Desire, that all-consuming fire is racing through my veins like lightning through a wire. I never changed. I still remain the same. My few and precious friends still love me anyway. I look up in the stars and wonder where you are. I owe it all to you. Your prayers have all come true. Oh, Fame. Still love you, Brenda. Love you too, Eddie. God bless y'all. See you soon.
Joe Shaver performing his song Fame. It's really a very moving song. Do you feel like your songwriting has changed in the past few years after all the losses you've experienced and the health crisis of your own. Has that had an impact on your songwriting?
You know, I haven't noticed it if it has. I just hurt so hard to do quality work. And that's what I've stayed with, and I believe that's why Cream finally comes to the top. I'd just be beyond me to be humble. I'd have to be acting humble if I was to be humble. I'm humble in a way, but I'm thankful more than anything that somebody finally started listening.
I guess it's in your memoir that you wrote that Johnny Cash, who was a longtime friend of yours, mm-hmm. said that when he was in rehab, he used to, every morning, he'd sing to himself your song, Old Chunk of Coal, which is a song about somebody who feels like an old chunk of coal but hopes to become a diamond one day. Mm-hmm. And I thought, there is no higher compliment a songwriter can have than that a song meant so much that, like, Johnny Cash would have sung it to himself to give himself strength every morning.
I hung up when I started crying. You know, I'll still cry from time to time. Not in front of anybody, but I started crying. It just was the greatest compliment, and I just still love him so much. And that's the main reason I wanted him on that album with me, just close the show there. This new album I've got is called The Real Deal. It's on Compadre Records.
You say in your memoir that you read the Bible every day.
Yeah, I do. Try to. Down here lately, I haven't actually. I missed it a day or two.
So do you think your songs have been influenced by reading the Bible?
Oh, yeah, sure.
How?
Yeah. Jesus Christ is he's the one who made us all number two. And I always say, if you don't love Jesus, go to hell. But may the God of your choice bless you also.
It's very charitable.
Yeah, I'm a giving man.
Billy Joe Shaver, would you like to play a song for us to close?
Yes, I would. I'd like to do Try and Try Again. Saved my life. I went up on the mountain and I looked down on my life. I had squandered all my money, lost my son and wife, and my heart was filled with sorrow. And I almost took my life, but I found the strength inside me to give life one more try. And if at first you don't succeed, just try and try again. And if at first you don't succeed, well, try and try again. And if all you would do is lose, you'd better find a way to win. If at first you don't succeed, try and try again. Well, I know someday the world will learn to sing a better song. The lame will walk, the mute will talk, we all will sing along. The fighting will be ended, and all hunger will be gone. It's everybody's business till we get the good work done. And if at first you don't succeed, just try and try again. And if at first you don't succeed, well, try and try again. And if all you do is lose, you better find a way to win. If at first you don't succeed, well, try and try again. And if at first you don't succeed, just try and try and try again. If at first you don't succeed, try and try again. And if all you do is lose, you'd better find a way to win. If at first you don't succeed, well, try and try again. I know someday I say I know someday the deaf man's gonna hear the blind man's song. And someday the whole world gonna grow new eyes to see and new ears to hear. We're all gonna sing along. And our point of view is gonna grow into a pure and perfect one. And the voice of truth inside us all gonna help us sing that song. If at first you don't succeed, brother, sister, try and try and try again. Amen and amen. You got to keep trying, folks. Just keep trying. Sometimes, if you just keep trying, you can get it done. But you got to keep trying. Try and try again. Amen and amen.
Billy Joe Shaver, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Songwriter and singer Billy Joe Shaver. He's featured along with some of his musician friends on the new CD Tribute, a tribute to Billy Joe Shaver. His new memoir is called Honky Tonk Hero.